The rain on your roof calls you home. In two ways, you are home to it. It calls you home. The light on your floor, it calls you home. The longing in your heart, it calls you home.
Begin walking meditation. Please return. And I will hand it over to Sarabender Roshi for our Dharma talk.
Thank you, Kelly. And hello, everyone. There's some wonderful rumbling going on around here, and actually, what some of that sound of rain was hail. So it's a wonderful, fierce evening here in Colorado Springs. And it's really great to see us gathered here. You're beautiful. And thank you for coming to look at some questions together. I'd like to begin this conversation about our way, and it's come up now for several reasons. One, because you've asked for it. You know, the question keeps coming up again and again. What is this thing called Zen, and why do we do what we do the way we do it? And those questions. And second, because my own heart is asking, in this time, in this green spring, how is the way appearing? What color, what shape, what scent is this way right now, this spring, emerging from the ground of our beings? And third, because the world seems to be asking too, urgently, all of that. And so I'd like to begin with a wonderful gift that arrived today in the hands of Mary Montoya, of three 800-year-old Anasazi squash seeds sent by Van. 800-year-old Anasazi squash seeds. Seeds from this very land, from another time. What will they want? How will they thrive? What will they teach me? How will they nourish us? We'll get to find out what they look like, what they grow to be in this place. And we'll taste the fruit they engender, hopefully. And we can collect their seeds, maybe. If not the three that grow in my garden, maybe the ones that grow in Mary's garden. the ones that grow in Van's garden, this luxury of seeds. And this seems like a very good time to bless them, to bless the seeds of awakening that come to us from our ancestors from many lands. So from so far away in time and place, and who knows, even from other worlds, do we know? In many voices, we've heard our ancestors say that the way is powerful, is beautiful, not hard, also mysterious and hard to see, and that it has to be discovered, tasted, not learned from descriptions. That means tasted in these particular forms, in our mouths, these practices, the ones we have, tasted here and now this way, indescribable, and yet, aren't our teachings and our koans sort of descriptions as well, like, this is the stone drenched with rain that points the way. Like each of us has inside a light. Like your ordinary mind is the way. And like this longer, sometimes this longer one, you feel lost. A koan that arrives in pictures, you know, there you are lost in the woods, hearing only the cicadas in the evening. You see signs or something, you see tracks, you catch a glimpse of it, its big horns or its rear end, magnificent against the sky. You manage to connect yourself to it and make an unbreakable bond with it. While you learn its ways and it learns yours, and then it carries you home to rest so deeply you disappear and wake up to find you're at home for the first time, so beautiful that this home goes with you right down into the town. Sometimes the koans are like that. Is that a description? So then, how shall we describe our way right here and now in this time? Well, we can describe with some particulars, I think. So I wrote down six notes about our way that seemed real, that seem real to me. You'll have your own. These are ones that are alive for me right this evening. One, before and with anything, we can embed our practice in service. Whatever that means to you, whatever that means to me, to embed my practice in service seems like a really important part of the way to me. It's powerfully protective. It opens and softens us. Service does. It keeps us grounded in the real stuff of the day. And it connects us to something bigger so that we don't feel like this isolated particle of being trying to do something. In service, we're connected to something bigger. I think sometimes Zen in the West has forgotten this more than in some ways Asian. I don't know, comparisons are odious, as my father used to say. But lest we forget, it's valuable to remember that part, I think. Second, this way assumes two things, I think. First, in some words that are familiar to some of you, everything is wet with dew and the truth is ready to harvest. There is nowhere and nothing that is outside of it. That voice of the cuckoo that's calling us home is just this thunder, right? Just this cry of my heart. Just this news on the radio. And along with that, the second thing I think our way assumes is everything is an ongoing creativity, and we are a part of it. Everything is an ongoing creativity, and we are an inextricable part of it. That without which this ongoing creativity is not what it is. Us, essential to it. So your particular creativity is not only okay, but essential. It's yours, but it does not belong to you. And your particular creativity is the being of you every instant. It's not some big thing you have to make happen. It's what you are. So I said, first, before and with everything, we embed our practice in service. Second, this way assumes that everything is wet with dew and that everything is an ongoing creativity. And third, the foundational practice that lets you realize this and enact it is meditation. The foundational practice that lets you and me realize this and enact it is meditation. Meditation is just releasing yourself into the stream of ongoing creativity without reservation. Releasing yourself into the ongoing stream of this creativity without reservation. Again and again and again. Fourth, we have three great movements of attention to discover. Your mind is capable of deep concentration. Deep concentration is present, and your mind can join it. It's a capability that's your birthright. Does that mean you can instantly do it all the time? Well, we can discover as we practice more and more this capability of mind. That really just seems like a capability of the universe, but that we have in us humans and can come home to it, come home to it. A deep concentration. It's a movement of attention, kind of. And the second, your mind is capacious. It can open wider than wide. It goes way beyond even what you know, the awareness of your mind. Your mind that is mind is mind. It's so big. And so we can practice that. We can practice recognizing and claiming, in a way, the capacity of mind, the openness, wider than wide. And third, your mind is endlessly curious. That is its nature. Could also call it wonder, wonderment. And so our practices are really just on, what's it called? An unleashing, maybe, of these movements of attention. So that when we discover we can claim those, that we can learn them in a way, learn them the way a baby learns what a hand does, what a foot does. And babies endlessly learn what hand and foot do together. We're like that, yeah? We can endlessly discover what mind can do. We're allowed to do that. We don't have to be having our attention claimed and pulled apart by everything all the time. So that fourth point is those three that I think is an essential part of our way is the recognition that we have and can play with and can dive into and can inhabit those three great movements of attention. Concentration, openness of mind, and wonderment or curiosity. Inquiry, we call it. When it's activated, that was the word I was looking for. Fifth, practices of devotion and movement and art can expand and release these movements of attention. There are ways that we play in the realm of deep concentration, in the realm of wider than wide, in the realm of endlessly curious. devotion and movement and art, ritual. And sixth, then, about koans. Koans, I wrote use. I wonder why I said that word. Use and expand on these movements of attention. Call upon them. Might be better. Call upon them and expand on them, allowing us endless connections and creativity. Some of our teachers, my teachers, have said some things a lot better than I do about koans, so I'm going to read you some little bits. This, some of you might have heard already, her reading from Joan's new book. The great koan project is to connect us with this larger life we sometimes lose sight of amid the concerns of our ordinary days. To connect us with this larger life that we sometimes lose sight of amid the concerns of our ordinary days. So if that's the koan project, can you see how our already inborn capacities for concentration, for wideness of attention, for inquiry are given to, are particularly apt to koans? I'm going to go on to connect us with this larger life we sometimes lose sight of amid the concerns of our ordinary days, to make us permeable to the beauty and the anguish of this life, permeable to the ways we are made of and contribute to the collective dream of the world. Permeable to the primordial mystery we glimpse behind the veil of every day. But the purpose of realizing this mystery, as the Chinese teacher Deshan said, is to break through to grasp an ordinary person's life, to come full circle so that we might wholeheartedly ask, how can I help? Coming right back to that impulse of service where we started. So the movement, that's the end of that quote from Joan. So that this movement of Buddhism that we're rooted in happened in China 1,000 years ago when Buddhism met Taoism, creating Chan, and eventually our Koan Wei. A little bit, Joan quotes this, the scholar Jinhua Jia describes Chan's shift in emphasis as one from pacifying, cultivating, and contemplating the mind to letting the mind be free. So in the earlier tradition of Buddhism, there was an emphasis on getting your mind to be peaceful and cultivating the powers of mind and contemplating mind. And when Taoism in China was so primary and so powerful as an already going stream of understanding and practice that Buddhism could join, then there's this shift in emphasis to letting the mind be free. And letting the mind be free, that's no longer quoting, the quote ended there. But letting the mind be free actually asks a great deal of us. And this is what cons are designed for. They're fantastically good at it. Letting us feel the feeling of it, letting us discover the movement of a mind freeing itself, shaking off its restraints. And this is one reason also that we recite and study vows, to strengthen our commitment to this big human project. And so that, you know, reminded me of the words that we read at the beginning of our refuge ceremony, that are actually written by, I think, by Joan and John. When knowing stops and thoughts about who we are fall away, vast space opens up and love appears. Anything that gets in the way of understanding this is a cause of suffering and something to refrain from. So we help ourselves to, it's like a helping, we help ourselves to this possibility of mind, to this freedom of mind that the cons are so designed for, by committing ourselves in this way to the conditions that make it possible. Moment by moment, thought appears, the earth appears, we appear. When we test each bit of life against the heart, we find we cannot reject any, for we are the only hands and eyes that eternity has. So in this way, we help ourselves with the practices that help, that in a way call up the commitment in us that is already primary, so that we have the strength and develop strength in doing what the cons offer to help us do. So I think I'm still okay for time. If you hang with this process a little longer, Joan Tarrant recently posted an introduction to the formal con curriculum of the Pacific Zen School, of which we are a part. And although there are some differences in the ways that we in open source approach them, they're not large differences by and large. And so I wanted to read a little bit of what he says about the con, the origins of our con way and curriculum. He begins by saying the method of immersing yourself in a great question is more ancient than Buddhism. It seems to arise naturally in some people when they turn to spiritual things. It's a method that faces human ignorance squarely and at the same time has faith that remedy for suffering exists and that a sincere effort will reveal that remedy. Koan work, in a formal sense, has its origins in China during the early Tang Dynasty, 7th to 9th centuries of the Common Era, when sayings of former and current masters were circulated and used in meditation. In the Song Dynasty, they were collected into anthologies, which formed the basis of a curriculum. The tradition then crossed to Japan and Korea, In Japan, the Sotokan curriculum fell gradually into abeyance, though it may be continuing, may have continued into the last century somewhat. The Rinzai tradition, the Linji tradition, has been revitalized from time to time, the Kan tradition through Linji, by grand masters who had awakening experiences and a strong inner connection to the koans. One of these figures was Hakuin Ekaku, who in the 18th century emphasized transformative enlightenment experiences and lifelong deepening of wisdom. So that's the pairing that is really foundational in our way. Transformative enlightenment experiences and lifelong deepening of wisdom. Hakuin and his immediate successors put the koans into a specific order and formalized a system that gave you a way to navigate past the point where most spiritual guidance stops. This is a point that I thought was, well, he says this for me was the amazing feature of koan work. And I'm really agreeing with that, that one of the things that brought me to Zen in the first place was that I felt that the teachings of my Christian upbringing were beautiful and true. And how do you do that? How do you grow with that? How do you live a human life on that basis? And this tradition offered a context and tools and guidance. So John goes on to say the first shift into freedom, the first kind of glimpse of the beauty of the fundamental nature of things, I would say, and the fundamental nature of you. The first shift into freedom was explored and tested in depth through checking questions. And then, for those who wished, years of deepening and embodiment were possible. And that is still the way we practice. We can enjoy and deepen with each other, with koans collectively, and we're finding more and more that there's huge power in this collective investigation. And we can individually take up a curriculum of koans that have a tremendous amount of wisdom built into them for us, if we wish. It's a commitment. Two lines came down from Hakuin, the Inzan and Kosen lines. The latter was known for its emphasis on subtlety in the work, which meant, among other things, lots of checking questions for koans. And much of American koan work comes through that line. Koans came to the West in a peculiar way, however, since one of the notable figures of the process was Dayun Harada, who had worked with a prominent Linji master. I think I'm not going to go into the details of this, but it's available on the PCI website, so I'll send out a link to it so that you'll be able to review it yourselves and to And what I would like to do next time I give a talk of this sort is to go more deeply into this part about the development of the koan tradition and where we are with it, and to bring in more discussion of that. So I might stop right there on this part. And And then go back to a couple of other points and then open us for discussion, for conversation. As I said quite a while back, all that's asked of us is that we let it in. This here and now voice of the cuckoo calling us home. And it's just tonight that I'm really tickled by realizing the double meaning of that. You know, this voice calls me home. I'm its home. And it calls me home in the other way. But that's not exactly true, is it? It asks, it's not all that it asks of us. It asks that we let it in and through, that we open ourselves to what is way bigger than our ability to hold it and find it by going bravely inward where it can be found and outward where it can be found. The beating of my own heart, my breath after breath, the free and easy song of the black-headed grosbeak, courting from the top of a pine tree in the morning sunlight, the wail of a mother in Gaza whose child has been bombed to smithereens. All of this. Like any true lover, this way offers us everything, love and life itself. And it asks of us everything, surrender to what will come, all of it. So what am I and what are you cultivating? This, just this right here, thunder.